Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This is the Big East Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
You bet. Here we go. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We are just flying already in hour two. Of course, my producer, Sean Mapes, is with me, always helping us kick off things at the top of the hour. I wanted you to weigh in on and give us your reaction to Tom Izzo's comments, because he is all for the handshake line. And he said that's not going to go away anytime soon. His players will be doing invisible handshakes, he said.
Yeah. Maybe need to practice the handshake line.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but... I completely agree with Coach Izzo. I mean, he brings up a good point about, like, so we're just going to be completely professional basketball at this point. There still needs to be some sort of teaching going on at these institutions of higher learning, even on the basketball court. And, I mean, how many handshake lines? There's a handshake line after every single college basketball game. This is the first one that's ended in a brawl in recent memory. So I don't think this needs to be some sort of – this isn't some – you know, wave taking over college basketball. I think it's an isolated incident that Coach Howard should have handled better. But, I completely agree with Coach Izzo.
So let's move ahead. We were just talking about a legendary coach in Tom Izzo at Michigan State. But what about Hall of Fame coach Mike Krzyzewski? You know, he is in his farewell tour. He's led Duke to 5 national titles, 41 years, 12 Final Fours, and 15 30 win seasons. Why do you think now is the time for him to walk away? Do you think he's just tired?
I mean, that could be very well a big part of it. I mean, he is 75 years old, just turned 75.
Is he really?
Yeah, he just turned 75. Some was made about his maybe the NIL, the changing landscape of college basketball. He kind of pushed back against that being the reason. I think, honestly, he feels like John Shire is ready to kind of take the handoff and run with it as a young coach taking over this prestigious program.
Who or do you think are some of the most dangerous teams that are on the bubble right now?
Anyone in the Big 12, because they're playing absolutely insane schedules right now. I know your Oklahoma Sooners are in the mix. And if you come away with a home win, you're like, thank God we survived. So any team from the Big 12 is going to be pretty well prepared to go up against some of these other teams in weaker conferences.
We are getting ready to shine a spotlight on a brand new book, Athletes Who Rock. You bet he's back. Motez Bashara after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back on the Saturday morning Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Love to chime in with all of our listeners and connect with all of you at Twitter at E Radio Sports. We are so excited to welcome back to our program. He is an author, CNN Sports feature writer, and that is Motez Bashara, who has just released his new book that is titled Athletes Who Rock, that shares the inspiring backstories of 15 individuals who achieved success in the ultra-competitive world of pro sports and music. Longtime guest on our show. Welcome in this morning, Motez. It's been way too long.
Thanks so much. Great to hear your voice.
Well, you've been on my program, as I just mentioned, many, many times. This was a very special project you had been working on for quite some time. So take us back. I mean, what was the inspiration of this book?
Well, back when I was in college, way back, I was watching an NBA game, and there was a player in back in the day named Wayman Tisdale, who was a power forward for the Sacramento Kings and Phoenix Suns for a little while. And I remember hearing the announcer say that Tisdale was also a professional jazz musician. He was a bassist. He had his own band, and he had recorded a few albums. And I thought that was like the coolest thing in the world. This guy was like an All-American superstar at Oklahoma.
Yep.
And he was also a very accomplished jazz musician. He ended up retiring a little bit early and focusing solely on his music career. And I think he was nominated for a bunch of awards as well. Later on, me being a big Yankees fan, having grown up in New York, I realized that Bernie Williams, their all-star center fielder, was also a very accomplished jazz musician. Again, I just thought, you know, it's so hard to make it in one professional field that's so competitive, like professional sports, much less in two areas that are. So these guys really intrigued me. And then, of course, there were guys like Shaquille O'Neal, who recorded a platinum album while he was an NBA All-Star, and the list goes on. So I thought it'd be cool to compile a list of a bunch of guys who are at the top of their games in music and sports and try and interview them and see what links the two worlds and also how the thrills compare. You know, what's it like for Bernie to hit a home run in the World Series versus playing to a sold-out gig at Radio City Music Hall?
I'm so glad you lead off this interview. You know, I'm a proud Sooner. And talking about a Sooner sensation, and Wayman Tisdale just had a prolific career at Oklahoma. But I understand you bring up Bernie Williams. They teamed up together on a project, right?
They did. I think it was Bernie's first album. I think Wayman played on a track or two. And so it was almost like the passing of the baton. Now, very sadly, Wayman died you know, very early in his life. I think he had cancer.
He did.
He had some serious illness that brought him down very early. And so, you know, he's one of the OGs who was a pioneer in both music and sports. And the introduction, the prologue to my book, really goes over a whole list of athletes who have done this over time to various degrees of success, including, surprisingly, Muhammad Ali, and not so surprisingly, guys like John McEnroe. You know, there were country music singers, Mike Reed, who played for the Cleveland Browns. He was an offensive tackle All-Pro who's in the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame, and he was Grammy nominated, and I think he penned Bonnie Raitt's "I Can't Make You Love Me," so he's very accomplished as well.
You know, it's so interesting you talk about country music. I think of Charlie Pride. Of course, my dad was a 40-year member of the Grand Ole Opry and is in the Texas Country Music Hall of Fame, but he often talked about Charlie Pride. They were dear friends, and Charlie actually lived in my home state of Montana. He spent time in Great Falls and in Helena, and he played, minor league baseball? So he was a hybrid as well.
He's in the prologue as well. And I talk about how it was kind of by chance. He was just trying to double his money in the minor league game. So they asked him to sing the national anthem before the game. He was a good singer, of course.
Very.
And
love Charlie.
Yeah. Two country singers from Nashville were at one of the games and discovered him and said, "You should move to Nashville and just, you know, forget baseball." Because he had been suffering from some injuries. So he wasn't, you know, quite the player he used to be. And then, yeah, he moved to Nashville and the rest was history.
Wow. Go anywhere online, pick up a copy. Athletes Who Rock. That is our dear friend, author Motez Bashara, joining us this morning on Sports Map Radio Network. So when you're pinning or you're chronicling a book, I mean, it's all about, you know, what you're learning as well. So what did you learn about what makes an elite performer?
There's a number of traits that they all have. First of all, they're all kind of, you know, born overachievers, really. When they set their minds to something, they don't give up easily. They don't set boundaries or barriers for themselves. They don't think along the lines of, oh, you know, I could never do that. It's almost the opposite. It's really like for these guys, the sky's the limit, even though sometimes they have no reason at all to believe that they could be pros in these very competitive fields. So, for instance, Damian Lillard, who's in the book, he did not play a minute of his sophomore year high school basketball team. He transferred to, I think it's Alameda High School in Oakland, where Jason Kidd played, and the coach didn't see him as a good player, and literally he did not step on the court the entire minute. And yet Lillard's belief never waned. You know, he was overlooked by all the big schools. He played at Weber State, who hadn't had an NBA prospect in 23 years when he got there. And again, you know, he made it to the top of that division and then broke his leg his junior year. broke his foot, I should say, and then came back, you know, rather than sulk. He shot 400 jump shots a day from a chair, perfected his high arcing jump shot, and became the rookie of the year in the NBA, I think, in 2013-2014 season, above Anthony Davis. So, you know, his confidence was sky high. And it's the same, really, with all these guys. I mean, Bronson Arroyo, from when he was about 8 years old, was thinking about becoming a pro baseball player just because his dad had instilled so much confidence in him. They were weight training, believe it or not, and taking vitamin supplements and stuff when he was a little kid. Yeah, so confidence is one thing. Another is the fact that, as one of my interviewees, Mark Butcher, the great England cricketer, said, you just can't get bored easily. You know, these things like playing intricate guitar solos and being a renowned pianist, you've got to just put the hours in. You know, you've got to get to the point where you really love the process. You know, you love the process of learning new things. Kobe Bryant used to say that too, of course. You know, he used to love getting to practice early in the morning. I think 5:30, 6 in the morning he'd go to practice. And they just love that side of it. You know, it's not just the accomplishment. It's the process of getting there that they love too. So these are two of the traits that they share among themselves. I mean, one other thing is I realized a lot of these guys are not just great at sports and music. They're great at everything they set their minds to. So, for instance, Ronnie Cycli, the former Miami Heat center, who's a world-class DJ, he's also a big real estate developer in Miami. So, you know, he buys up homes and kits them out, and he's a big luxury real estate developer out there. So these guys really set their minds to lots of different things, and often I find that they're great at multifacets of their life.
And Ronnie Cycli, big fan of him. He was one of the first internationally born players to really make a serious impact in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, this book goes into much more than just sports and music with the lives of these great personalities. You know, Ronnie Cycli grew up during the Civil War in Lebanon, and he told me a story where, you know, at 9 years old, he found himself holding a machine gun in a roadblock, you know, blocking cars and, you know, in the midst of a war-torn area of Beirut. Until, by chance, a friend of his parents happened to be in one of the cars and said, "Hey, I know you. You know, you're the kid of so-and-so." And he's like, no, that's not me. And, you know, 15 minutes later, his dad came in a car with some friends and, you know, grabbed him, shook him up, and then they had to reassess whether they were going to stay in Beirut or not, you know. He eventually moved to Athens, of course, and became an all-star, a stud athlete at the American high school there, and then eventually at Syracuse, where he was a walk-on, and the rest is history. So, yeah, a lot of these guys come from really, really interesting different backgrounds. Essence Carson, the WNBA champion, who is a hip-hop artist and executive at Motown Records, believe it or not. She grew up in a very rough part of Paterson, New Jersey. She saw one of her very familiar neighbors lying dead, you know, on the street just outside of where her grandparents lived. And she also went to the School of Performing Arts in high school as a scholarship, was a great pianist, got a scholarship to Rutgers, was an All-American, academic All-American, and, you know, it's just an incredible success story.
So many of these athletes have endured a lot of adversity. It is a dynamic collection of in-depth interviews of athletes and musicians. The title of the book is Athletes Who Rock, feature writer with CNN, also ESPN. That is Motez Bashara. That is the author. And give him a follow on Twitter, at Motez B. Continued success, Motez. We look forward to another conversation here real soon. Thank you so much for dropping by.
It always goes too quickly.
It does.
Thanks so much, Viggy.
Absolutely. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. You come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
The Big E Sports Show. Connect with us We are always live on Twitter at eRadio Sports. You can email the show, info@eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. And you bet, college basketball, the conversation, it is going to continue because the countdown is on for March Madness. We certainly have a lot of ground to cover in our next segment, and we are so delighted to have with us for the very first time, he is from USA Today, the publisher of At Wolverines Wire, and give him a follow on Twitter, at Isaiah Hull. Good morning, Isaiah. First time on the show. How are you?
Morning. Good. Just winding through all the madness of what's been happening as far as Michigan basketball lately.
Yeah, you had to muscle through just kind of a crazy week. That wild post game between Michigan and Wisconsin and that physical altercation. So what was your reaction when you saw all this go down?
Well, my reaction initially is different than what it kind of is now. For the most part, I mean, I still look at it as there's no excuse for Juwan Howard and striking someone else. But I understand why it happened a little bit more. Not necessarily the initial everything, because you have the press that caused the timeout by Greg Gard in Wisconsin that caused Juwan to say, I'll remember that. I completely understand where Greg Gard was coming from, especially thinking he and Juwan were cool and being able to trying to defuse the situation, but and unfortunately his hand on him is kind of what stirred Juwan up. I understand how that's a congenial attempt, but for Juwan, who was angry and trying to walk past, didn't work out. Obviously they got exchanged words and everything happened that way, and it seemed like things were going to kind of move on. Juwan started moving to the locker room, and then Joe Klabenhoft came in and that's when he put his hands on Terrence Williams. That's kind of where things escalated. So I can understand, because Juwan was looking right at that situation, looked at Klabenhoff, the assistant Wisconsin coach, put hands on his player. I can see why it happened. It still shouldn't have happened. Watching it, it reminded me of watching, especially because things escalated and escalated. Thankfully, they stopped very short of, I remember watching the Malice at the Palace live on TV as it unfolded. It was much short of that, but that's what it reminded me of in the moment, you know, because it just things kept on moving forward, not in a good way. But now that I kind of look back, I say, Juwan, you still shouldn't have struck Klabenhoff. Cooler heads have to prevail when you're a head coach, especially. You have to set an example for everybody. I think that it set a bad example for both teams, and that's why we saw things escalate. I thought the punishment was fair. Not being fired, I also thought was fair. I thought he deserved to retain his job. It would have been a little bit different if he would have reared back and had a closed fist and did some damage, a la Woody Hayes against Clemson, but not what happened. So I think that the punishments were fair on the Michigan side of things, and now they just have to try to move forward without him for the rest of the regular season, and it's a tough stretch with Michigan State, Ohio State, Illinois, Iowa coming up here in the next week and a half.
So you recount what happened. We've had, you know, a good week to kind of digest how this all went down. I guess I was surprised that Juwan Howard, head coach for Michigan, didn't apologize in postgame after the incident. He did not seem contrite at all.
Not in that moment. He did apologize later in a statement. I think that's just cooler heads had not yet to prevail at that point. And I can, again, I can understand why he didn't, if it's a situation where he felt that it was a jerk move by Gard to call the timeout. I think that's still open to interpretation. I'm not really sure why he's that upset. It makes sense why Gard would call a timeout in that situation, you know, just for the sake that Klabenhoft put hands on his players. I completely understand why in that moment, and with tension still very high, it's just moments after a game, why he wouldn't apologize. It was, that said, it was a bad look at the time still. But that he hadn't cooled down enough to say, hey, that shouldn't have happened. If he would have, maybe that could have mitigated a little bit of the punishment that he ended up receiving, because Wisconsin athletic director immediately got after the Big Ten. And it would have been one thing if he would have come back and said, hey, you know what? I recognize what just happened. Things got the best of me. Can't do that. If he would have done that, then there probably wouldn't have been the rush on Wisconsin's end to try to get Juwan in trouble, because then they would have said, all right, well, not, you know, maybe we understand you know, a little bit. If he would have just come out and said, hey, I wouldn't have done anything until he put his hands on my player, that probably could have made it so it went from being a 5-game suspension rest of the regular season to maybe like a game. Maybe it was would have just been a – it probably would have been more than just a fine. But nonetheless, it took him a little bit of time to cool down. Again, regardless, as the head coach of a major, major college basketball program, you've got to be better. You can't let that type of thing happen, even if you see someone put your hands on the players. You got to let those who are going to mediate, get in between, do that. And unfortunately, not only did he not do that, he escalated things and then wasn't sorry for it in the immediate aftermath. So not surprising, but still have to be better.
Yeah, leaders are supposed to lead. And you think of Juwan Howard, I mean, he is the head coach of an elite university. And we talked about this in hour one. You just have to wonder about the residuals, like the long-term effect. Will this impact recruiting?
I'm not really sure, because my initial reaction was that it will. But now that I kind of look at it and you see what Michigan players are saying and how they were really happy with the way that unfolded, in the sense that it made them feel that Juwan had their back no matter what the repercussions. With that in mind, who wouldn't want to play for a guy like that? He's not getting fired up and yelling at you, the player. He's got your back. So it very well could swing the other way. Keeping in mind, he's got a really good recruiting class that's currently on campus and playing. It was the number one class in the country. Got a pretty nice one brewing here for 2023 as well. It very well could swing the other way. Just because, you know, it's got something that's got national attention. I'm sure a lot of recruits are looking at him saying he had his players in mind there. It wasn't a situation where he was just complaining to officials. It wasn't that he was going after his own players. I think that could resonate in the other way, even though it seems kind of counterintuitive. But obviously, still way too early to tell what kind of a factor impact it might have.
Isaiah Hull, USA Today, joining us this morning at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Check him out, publisher of Wolverine's Wire. So after this has all gone down, where do you stand now in terms of the handshake line? I mean, what was your reaction to Tom Izzo's comments?
I think the handshake line needs to stay. I don't think it's endemic to the handshake line. Just because it happened once here doesn't mean that suddenly we're going to see a brawl every time that any teams come together. I think maybe it should be if the officials can, or some other party can, figure out in advance that maybe teams shouldn't shake hands. I think it shouldn't be looked at as a non-sportsmanlike situation. But I think that should be on a per game basis. If teams and coaches are going after each other, or they seem like really chippy, there's a lot of technical fouls, I think maybe they say, hey, no handshake line. I think that would be a fair way to do it. But I think it would be ridiculous to just eradicate it altogether just because it happened once.
Isaiah Hull with us just a few more minutes. Sports Map Radio Network, USA Today. And so let's move ahead. You cover the Big Ten Conference. So give us the pulse on the conference and the strength of it this year.
Basketball-wise, I mean, it's still extremely strong. You've got some of the usual players in Purdue, who's obviously extremely good. They've had their ups and downs still as well. They got run off the court by Michigan. And then you obviously look at, you know, Wisconsin being a really good team, and some others. But top to bottom, I mean, it just seems like it's anyone can beat anyone on a given night. You know, the last couple of years, it's been one of, if not the strongest conference in the country. Mm-hmm. But that continues to be the case. I mean, we're looking at 7, 8, maybe 9 teams that could get into the NCAA tournament, just kind of depending on how things unfold. I meant to mention Ohio State as well. That's actually who I meant to mention before Wisconsin. But all these teams are just seeming to battle it out. And any night you think that you know who's going to win a particular matchup outside of the bottom of the conference, outside of Nebraska or Northwestern. I mean, even Northwestern gives teams a run for their money. Really, anyone can win it. And right now you look at Illinois, you look at Purdue, you look at Ohio State, and you say that those are probably your top contenders, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if anyone in that mid-tier caught fire and ended up winning the Big Ten tournament. And it wouldn't surprise me if one of those other middle teams, whether it be Michigan, Michigan State, I don't really think Michigan would, but one of those teams was able to kind of catch fire in the NCAA tournament and go pretty far. But it kind of speaks to the strength of just having so many teams and it being a battle on a nightly basis.
Great stuff this morning. Isaiah Hull from USA Today. As I said, he's the publisher with Wolverine's Wire. Check him out. Also give him a follow on Twitter at Isaiah Hull. We look forward to another conversation real soon. You stay safe. Talk soon. Thank you, Isaiah.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. NFL news and notes. 12-year NFL alum Anthony Becht is coming up next at SportsMap Radio Network.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour two, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We always love to connect with our audience, and thank you so much for carving out time and joining us on this Saturday morning. We are always live on social media, at eRadio Sports on Twitter. You can email the show, info@eradiosports.com. Twice is nice, podcastarena.com. And did you know you can take us anywhere, anytime? We make it so easy. You just download the SportsMap Radio app, and we're always ready, fired up to talk some NFL news and notes. I know it's the postseason, but the Rams, they win it all in Super Bowl 56, and we are thrilled to have joining us for the very first time. Our next guest is Anthony Becht, NFL alum, 12 years, had an incredible career in the league as a tight end and played for a variety of teams. We're going to discuss that, and it's good to have you on with us this morning. Hello, Anthony. How are you, and Happy New Year.
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here. Definitely. Anytime I can reach out to new audiences, I'm all for it. So it's good to be on the show.
Well, it's hard to believe already. It's been 2 weeks since the Rams won their first Super Bowl title in 22 years. I'm always interested to go inside the huddle and under the helmet and get the takeaways. So what stood out in your mind?
Well, you know, look, I think number one, it was a great game. You know, I thought both teams were evenly matched. Clearly, when you look at what the Rams have done on paper throughout the season, especially the lineup that they had, you really felt good about them moving forward and potentially making a run. The Bengals, obviously, the biggest surprise. I mean, there was improvement, and they played much better. But they did have some holes, in particular offensive line, which ultimately was probably the story of the game leading in. And ultimately, you know, probably cost them the game as well. But, you know, it's nice to see young players start to kind of be the faces of the NFL. Joe Burrow obviously is that player, but you know, it's good to see Matthew Stafford get one. It was kind of, when you look at his career, there was a lot of doubt about him as far as can he win the big games with a team that actually is a contender. And he proved everybody that he can do that. And clearly this team, if they can put and keep these pieces together, they can put themselves in a position to do more. But really, I thought it was a great game all the way through. And obviously, you know, coming down to the fourth quarter, opportunities were there, but the Rams were able to take advantage.
You bet, because the Rams gamble paid off for the ultimate prize, as the Rams wide receiver Cooper Kupp had that winning touchdown catch. And you know what? He stepped up in a big time way and made a critical play. That last drive was so special.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's amazing how well he's got since he entered the league. I remember him at the Senior Bowl and then through the combine, and then as he kind of started his career. He always was a very good player, but just how he separated himself individually. And now he's become, you know, when you talk about receivers, you know, arguably a guy that can't be covered. I mean, that's amazing for a guy that really is a movable piece, plays everywhere, outside, inside, comes from the backfield, goes out, and he just continues to be a matchup problem. And he's taken advantage of that, and he's the best in the business at doing it, and it showed big time in that football game. Clearly, you know, Stafford's number one guy heading into the season, and ultimately in the biggest games, he was the big-time player as well.
You know, for the Rams, it was a thrilling three-point win over the Bengals, and this is one of the questions that I've asked some of my guests over the past couple of weeks is, in your mind, were the Rams clearly the better team?
Well, you know, I think there was a lot of areas to point where you saw strengths leaning towards each team. You know, we talked about some of the big name players for the Rams defensively up front. And, I think the advantage was always there with the Rams in the game. I just felt like as you look at teams in the past, there's been teams that may not have had the best record or were the best teams, but they were the hottest going into the playoffs. I thought that was the Bengals. I picked the Bengals to win the game. I thought they were the hottest team coming in. They weren't the best team coming in. And, you know, look, the Rams just were ultimately too much for them, but the Bengals had chances, right? It wasn't like this game was out of hand and they couldn't get there. It just, you know, it came down to a last drive, couldn't get that protection. You saw, Jamar Chase down the sidelines, a defensive back falls down, and Joe Burrow just couldn't get that time he needed to connect. And ultimately, you know, the game ended on that fourth down kind of dump off to Perine where it came up short.
Well, and I also think of, you know, as far as the Rams, just the incredible composure that they showed. And I think personally that says a lot about just how mentally they tough were as a group. I mean, they kept believing.
They did. You know, I think for them, they had a little bit of a dry spell at the end of the season where, a lot of teams were, as they were getting hot through weeks, you know, 5 through 10, they started to kind of have a little bit of a lull and they weren't playing well. And OBJ was kind of not really being the guy that maybe they thought he was going to be as he, you know, came onto the roster. And then all of a sudden things clicked. And, you know, teams that obviously can get to that point, you know, the Rams were in the championship several years ago. They had a taste of it. And, you know, when you got guys like Aaron Donald and some of those big-time names that had that and want that, you could see the determination that they had, like you said, and it was just great to see on the field.
You're listening to The Voice, Anthony Beck, 12-year NFL tight end. He's also an analyst pre- and post-game for the Jets. And you just mentioned, Anthony, OBJ. What should the Rams do with him in the offseason? What's his future?
Well, you know, number one, it's a tragedy that he, you know, tore his ACL in the Super Bowl. In particular, the fact that it's the second time on the same leg, you know, that obviously raises a lot of red flags moving forward. You know, it's just that wear and tear and taking those chances on guys that have those kind of injuries are big. So I think I don't know, you know, if it's going to have to be a rushed process, if they're going to have to get something done right away. But clearly, I think them and a lot of other teams will probably wait to see how that process goes. And from there, just kind of see his growth. But unfortunately, I just feel like there's not a lot of leverage for OBJ. If he was healthy, obviously, he was a clear, huge factor in that game and scoring that first touchdown and everything he was doing leading up to the championship. So it's unfortunate for him, praying that he has a great recovery, but definitely has, you know, some odds against him as he tries to maybe, you know, either sign back with them or any NFL team moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just mentioned you are the pre- and post-game host for the Jets, and they did not have the season that they were hoping for. How would you summarize 2021 and just ultimately how it played out, your takeaways?
Yeah, super young team. You know, a lot of young players that Joe Douglas has been drafting and really trying to groom with his staff, with Robert Saleh and all the new coaches. You know, Michael Carter, a draft pick this year, had a phenomenal season. Vera Tucker, the guard, had a great season. Zach Wilson, you know, he's a guy that, you know, continues to have to learn and get better, and they have to build pieces around him, but they definitely saw some potential and some spurts to him throughout the season. I think the biggest disappointment was all their big-time free agent signings, Carl Lawson and Corey Davis and then, you know, some of the big-time starters and Marcus May. These guys were out. They got hurt, and it's just, you know, you tried to mix young with a couple key components and big signings, and it just didn't work out. And unfortunately for them, you know, they do have some components and pieces there they're going to build on. They got a ton of money in cap space to use this year. I don't anticipate them being heavy hitters in free agency, but they will get some strategic pieces. And then they have those 10 draft picks, more notably, I believe, 6 or 7 in the first 3 rounds. So they're excited about it. 2 first-round picks in the first top 10 picks. They can continue to build around their quarterback, get better pieces on defense, and get some of them bodies back healthy, and maybe sign some guys long-term deals within the program and try to continue to build. That's the only way to do it. But Zach Wilson is the key. He has to be the component that gets and makes the most strides in the offseason so they can really, you know, start to be a factor in the AFC.
Okay, so you mentioned Zach Wilson, but of course the top priority, it's got to be on that defense, right? Because the Jets were, the worst in the NFL. And do you blame that on kind of the youth of the team and that what's, you know, yep, perhaps made the season so long?
Well, you know, secondary is young. They have some really growing young players that they like on the cornerback position. Safety is a problem right now. You know, I feel like corner depth, safety depth, especially if there's a freak corner, this draft probably has several guys that in the safety and cornerback area that would be worth it for them to take in that 10 position this mm-hmm. year. So that'll be something I'll look forward to. And then, of course, you know, pass rushers in need as well. Carl Lawson, if he gets back healthy and he's back to the same guy, clearly you have a guy that could be as dominant as anybody in the league. But there are some guys at the top of the draft that, you know, like Thibodeau from Oregon or Hutchinson, depending on where these guys land and fall, that you could be in play for those players. So, you know, Joe Douglas has always been a trenches guy. He's built the offensive line. Mekhi Becton didn't play last year. I mean, he had a monster season the year before. If he comes back, you're talking about, you know, those the left side with Vera Tucker and himself being really just long-term 10-year guys. You know, do you want to add another piece? You know, more you have some pieces, Fant, that potentially is there that played well this year. Connor McGovern, the center, he's another guy, you know, that you have a piece of. Does he get a guard maybe in the draft? You know, there's some big-time offensive linemen. I don't know what for, but, you know, maybe you can have some movement there. But there's some impact players there that they can look at to help this team. But, you know, defensively, like you said, is going to be, to me, a big part of this draft.
Our NFL news and notes continues with Anthony Beck after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin NFL alum Anthony Beck. Let's kind of look in the rearview mirror and your time with the Jets. And I just have to wonder, too, you know, now being in the broadcast booth, how much do you enjoy covering your former team?
Well, it's, you know, number one, they're an outstanding organization, the best organization that I ever played for. You know, they drafted me in the first round. That family on the business side has grown from a lot of the VPs that were younger up-and-comers to now they're in positions now where, you know, I've been their friends for over 20 years. So they've treated me and my family, you know, really first class from the day I got signed all the way now. As I work for them, do a lot of things for them, podcasts, calling their preseason games with Ian Eagle, and then, of course, like you mentioned, the pre- and post-game throughout the season. You know, it's been a great relationship. I love the organization. I'll continue to do as much as I can with them. And, of course, you know, I'm always evolving as well. There may be some things that you may hear about me coming up here, and I'm excited about those things. So always trying to grow and always trying to, you know, just kind of do things that I really enjoy. And media has been one of them. Obviously, as a player, I've dabbled into coaching throughout my retirement years, the last 10 years. That's something now. My son's at Iowa State. He just left, so I have a little more freedom and flexibility, and I help coach the high school team there as well. So I just, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm looking at to potentially get into or add on to what I've already done so far in my post-career in the NFL.
Well, so, Anthony, the legacy does continue. Your son committed to Iowa State, so you're going to be spending a lot of time in Ames, Iowa with the Cyclones. I mean, like, tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really excited for him. You know, anytime you're a former professional player, you have children, you obviously hope internally that they want to do like you did, or they want to, you know, follow your footsteps. But really, for Rocco, it's his own dreams and paths. And as he got older through high school, he really started to get dialed in and really wanted to be great. And he had an outstanding high school career. He had, you know, had close to 15, 16 different offers. Iowa State, to me, it was, you know, the best choice for him. The coaching staff, Matt Campbell, had a lot of respect for those guys. Yeah. Matt Campbell's been one of the more desirable coaches, not only in college football, but the NFL as well. And he continues to be loyal to the program, which is a little bit of a dying breed when you look across the forum and landscape of coaching right now. So extremely excited for him and his career and his journey to watch him. You know, he's well past me whatever I've done in high school. So it's just fun to sit back and just kind of watch him, you know, kind of carve his story in stone.
So Rocco is going to be at Iowa State, but you played collegiately at West Virginia, correct?
I did, yep. You know, same conference now, Big 12.
Big 12,
so we'll
yep.
Be competing against my alma mater here when his time comes. But got a lot of admiration, respect, and have great relationships at West Virginia. Had a great career there. It launched me and helped propel me to become a first-round pick for the Jets back in 2000. And, you know, it's you know, been a great relationship all the way through to today. So, you know, great school, great, you know, met my wife there, which was great as well. So just a lot of great memories and a lot of great relationships with West Virginia.
Okay, we're up against the clock. Anthony Becht is with us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. Yes, we shine the spotlight on your son, Rocco, but you got to give some love to your daughter, Olivia. I understand she is an outstanding soccer player. Hey, we're all about Title IX and equal opportunity, right? For airtime.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, I was really proud of her.
Yeah.
She was a junior in high school. They did win the district finals this year. They came up short in the regional finals on their way to a potential state championship. But first time the school ever won it.
Wow.
She was on a loaded team this year, and she was very fortunate to be a part of it. She's a three-year starter. I'll tell you, she loves soccer. You know, I think high school is going to be probably the max for her. She has some other goals and opportunities after high school as far as school is concerned. And we're really excited about her journey as well. So I've been very blessed. You know, my wife did a great job. That's kind of what I tell everybody. And, you know, just truly been great to see, you know, my children do great things on and off the field. And you know, they continue to shine, and it's been nice for me and my wife to kind of sit back and enjoy that.
Absolutely. Teamwork makes the dream work, right, Anthony?
No doubt.
Absolutely. Hey, have a great weekend. Stay safe, and we look forward to another conversation. Congratulations. Continued success.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. Have a good
one. You bet. That, of course, was NFL alum Anthony Becht. A big thank you to all of our amazing guests and our lineup. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody. Don't drink and drive.